What do you do with an arts degree? I'm still not sure I know. I skipped 3 years worth of lectures just to binge watch your full shows. There must be some scholarship for accruing worthless knowledge. It's my only talent, honey. That and losing money. Let your excess hex debts rest and then just join us while we start on our
Welcome back to the Bachelor of Hearts podcast, the F-Boy Island Australia podcast that asked the question, eggplant, peach, and burrata. I couldn't determine any other ingredients. Is that a good salad, do you think?
What I'm feeling about eggplant, peach, and burrata is that there's not enough variation in texture.
They feel like they're just all from different worlds to me. But maybe I'm just showing my ass. I'm not very worldly, you know?
At least you're not showing your eggplant.
Hello, everyone. My name is Xavier Robetsky-Noonan, and I love The Bachelor. I found out where they shoot F-Boy Island, and the answer will absolutely shock you. And I hate the coronavirus. And joining me, as always, is my co-host with the mo-host, Max Quinn. How are you, Max?
Xavier, hello, listeners, hello. Before we go any further in this episode, we do want to acknowledge that we are recording on the unceded lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. This always was, this always will be Aboriginal land. We want to pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Say hello to you if you are a First Nations Bachelor of Hearts listener. Thanks for being here. Thank you for being here, listener, as we work through episodes 3 and 4 of F-Boy Island Australia. Xavi, let's do it. Before we get any further into the episode, what did you think of these?
I had a great time. I continue to have a great time with this show.
This show is genuinely so funny and so fun.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of a miracle. It's obviously, it's not completely breaking the mold, exploding my mind with like, you know, but what it is like reality TV done really well.
Done super well, unafraid to challenge tropes, be playful, all of the things that we like about the way that reality TV should be executed, and unafraid to break that fourth wall as well. We'll talk about it.
Yes, and like genuine personality as opposed to like sort of constructed reality, a lot of good writing, like planned bits that are scripted but like don't suck. It's not something I'm really used to on a reality show.
We have so much to dig into here on the BOH pod as we unpack episodes 3 and 4.
I will say, just because I teased it at the top, and we've had some questions about this, because it's not something that the show has really gone out of its way or even been willing to remotely approach.
No.
The actual location of the F-Boy Island. Where is it? Where can I go? Where should I charter my vessel to if I want to visit this godforsaken land full of, you know... Well, I don't know, actually. Here's a broader question before we even get into that. Is the 50-50 split between good guys and bad guys on F-Boy Island better or worse than real life?
I want to plead the fifth. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, really. Honestly, it's like, it's bad out there, but also...
It's bad on there.
Yeah. I found out where they shoot F-Boy Island, Australia. And I know all of our listeners were getting their atlases out, spinning their globes, you know, trying to track down this lost. I heard actually from one of our listeners that they actually discovered Atlantis, which it turns out is real.
Yeah, right.
They managed to find that before finding out where F-Boy Island is.
Did they have to go through the Bermuda Triangle to get there? How did that work?
You sort of play the Bermuda Triangle and then... That causes the F-Boy Island to rise up right out of the sea. No, I found out that the F-Boy Island is a faraway land, but perhaps not quite as far as you and I might have thought. It is, of course, the distant island of the mainland of Australia.
No.
And indeed, the location where they shoot F-Boy Island is like 45 minutes from the Gold Coast and where they shoot The Bachelors.
Oh my God.
It's called Summerlee's Ocean Retreat.
Is it an island? Is it on an island? Please answer me this.
I mean, in the sense that Australia, you know, mainland Australia is an island. It's a very big island.
Oh, they are getting off on such a technicality.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, on some level, isn't everything an island? You know what I mean? Like, aren't we all an island floating in an empty vast sea of the world? And that kind of, you know, in the galaxy and... but yeah, it's like very close to Mooloolamba, where I spent the early years of my life. It's not far from a lot of areas that we've discussed on this podcast for many years. And they've obviously just like sort of faked it a little by throwing in some, you know, stock footage of various islands and that kind of thing.
It's F-boy on land. We'll give them that.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, you know, it's like you could drive there from Ballina without feeling anything. I don't know why Ballina. I brought up that particular place, but...
Ballina.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just looking on a map and that's just a nearby place. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, near where Iggy Azalea's from in Mullumbimby.
Yeah,
you know?
Great.
The real F-Boy Island was inside us all along. And, you know, it was the friends we made along the way. And in fact... Speaking of friends that we made along the way, this segues quite nicely into something I would like to discuss in a segment that we love to do on this podcast, which, of course, along with discussing F-Boy Island, we are a Bachelor podcast. And so this is a segment where we catch up with the world of the Batch World in a segment called Batch World Catch Up. I couldn't have been clearer about that.
That was explicit.
I thought you were going to say that was exquisite, but then you said both. That was explicit.
Yep.
Maybe you should bleep what I said there. So, it, you know. Here's something.
Tell me.
Yeah, here's something. It sounds like Jay Leno. Bachelor Season 6 and Bachelor in Paradise Season 2 and 3 participant loved up personality and, most importantly, past and future Bachelor of Hearts guest Alicia Aitken Radburn has this week announced that she has written her memoir.
How exciting. Tell me more.
The book entitled The Villain Edit. A memoir about reality TV and taking control of the narrative will be published by Allen and Unwin and released on August 29th of this year and is available for pre-order now. And while we haven't spoken too much with Alicia, by all indications from what I can work out, it seems that this book will, you know, trace the journey to the moment her life changed. Thrust in front of a huge national audience, forced to think on her feet, and record one of the best episodes of a Bachelor podcast of August 2019.
She really took it to us in that episode. I remember thinking, one day, this woman is going to write a book about this experience.
Well, I remember thinking they will write about this in the history books, and I didn't realize Alicia was going to have to do it herself.
That's fine. Do you know, I can't believe it didn't occur to us.
That's true, actually. We're probably leaving some money on the table there. But history is written by the victors. Alicia walked away from that with her head held high. Mm. Although, you know, it is interesting. The book is called The Villain Edit, right? And, like, I personally don't feel like we really gave her a villain edit, you know? I feel like she came off pretty well. I thought we got on well. And I think listening back, you can sort of feel that reflected. But you know, I'm just enthralled by the opportunity to see the experience through Alicia's eyes, and you know, even if we're not portrayed too positively, I think it could be a really good learning experience for us,
right?
And how we bring other guests onto the show in the future, and you know, just see how far we've come since then. I got my pre-order in for this book, of course. If it's a batchy book, it's going on that shelf. But I'm very excited about actually reading this one. And I think listeners of this podcast will know that's not an endorsement that I hand out to just any old thing. You know what I mean?
There are lots of books in the Bachelor bookshelf. I don't know how many that we have cracked open.
That's right, yes. But I don't imagine this will be the last that you hear about this book on this podcast. We're very much looking forward to it. Also, now I just wanted to flag this because there's a trend emerging here. It's not. It's obviously this is another ex-Bachelor person who is writing a book and particularly writing a memoir, which has happened, you know, more times than, I don't know, plenty of times at this point. But I was thinking specifically that, like, okay, you've got the Brittany Hockley book that you read.
Yeah.
And there was the Brooke Blurton book that I read.
Mm.
And then, of course, there's the Honey Badger's Guide to Life.
That's right.
And now we're going to have this one.
Angie Kent's book.
Sure. Oh, yeah. But I was talking specifically about these ones. These are all from the same season. These are all Bachelor Australia season 6. Brittany, Brooke, Honey Badger, Alicia. So I'm curious as to who from that season is going to be next. I think there's maybe a few good potential options.
Tell me about who you think is in the mix.
Well, I would not be surprised if at some point we got a little more from Jamie Lee Days. The fact that she also came back to the show in Brooke's season.
That's right.
And, you know, talked very openly about her sexuality. You know, like, I mean, it could be an interesting read. I'd also be curious to read whatever Brittany Weldon might have wanted to write about her time, the way that she was portrayed.
This is such an incredible cast.
I mean, it's like, it's an all-star list, isn't it, really?
This really shaped the future of the franchise for years to come. Romy Puglia, who we have talked about in a premium episode of the podcast. We watched a horror movie that she starred in that also starred Angie Kent and Lincoln Lewis. What was that called?
It was called, ooh, yikes, there's a scary madman. No, what was it? It was The Possessed.
Oh, I love that we don't know.
It was The Possessed. Of course, Vanessa Sunshine. Vanessa Sunshine, iconic previous guest of our podcast, hopefully future guest.
Current mother.
Yes, exactly. Of a little ray of sunshine. I wonder if the child's name is Ray. I think I may know for sure that child's name is not Ray, but just something to consider. Maybe a nickname. I mean, who knows?
Hey, I have an item of news.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, I just wanted to say for some reason that the season 6 is a goldmine. Any single person who was on that show, even if they were voted out night one, should contact publishers. And there's a proven track record of book sales. But that's we're excited for that book. I can't wait. We already finished this talk about this segment. Maxie, something going on in your life?
Yeah, I got news from a season 7 Bachelor Australia contestant.
Is that right? Okay, that's good to know.
Yep.
I don't remember. We didn't talk about this prior. You've got a mischievous little grin on your face. What's going on?
Now, it's at this point that I've realized that maybe what I am talking about, the pre-agreed thing that I would talk about, features a season 8 Bachelor contestant.
Oh, I see. Okay, yes. Now it's making a little more sense to me.
And look, the news is concerning the very host of the show F-Boy Island, who, has recently been on tour. We have seen her. Her name is Abby Chatfield. She's been on...
I want to put it on the record just quickly that it was season 7 and I just fucked up.
Yes!
Sorry.
Yes! Great segue. Segue,
right,
King.
I quit the podcast. Max, you're in charge now.
Abby, to be honest with you, I'm just going to read this verbatim. We don't need to editorialize on what Abby has said here, but she's talking in the media about something that has been happening in the way that she has been interviewed about this show, F-Boy Island. So this is a conversation that has been started by Abby on social media in response to a question that she seems to have been asked a bunch of times in promoting F-Boy Island. So I think I just want to read what she has written. She says, "It's pretty hard to offend me personally in an interview, but there's a pretty cooked and misogynistic question I keep being asked about my role as host of F-Boy Island Australia, both privately and in press, and I just want to address it once. I can't believe I even have to do this, but it keeps on coming up. The question is, were you keen on, / did you want to fuck any of the contestants? Were you tempted? Did you use the show as your own way to meet guys? The answer is clearly no. As a host of a reality TV format, I would presume that is obvious. It is my job to host the show. No part of me enters that arena expecting a romantic connection. I am there to work, to control what is happening on set, and to gain the trust of contestants and try and make them comfortable, as I have been a contestant myself. Potential love interests isn't even a thought that crosses my mind for a moment. To be clear, I am not resisting a feeling. It doesn't exist. I am the host and I hold myself to a level of professionalism that, in my opinion, is very basic. Don't try to, / want to, fuck contestants. There is a power imbalance between myself and the contestants, which I would never breach or take advantage of. Not only is the notion of this highly inappropriate, it's also offensive to my level of professionalism and dedication to my role. I work hard in every facet of my career. Hosting a reality format is no different. I'm a young woman who speaks openly about sex. That doesn't mean that I'm some sort of fiend always on the lookout for my next fuck, regardless of where it comes from. I'm a professional, despite my age and gender. I've never heard any other host be asked this question. Osher is never asked if he's been tempted by contestants, even before he was married. Even typing that sentence feels absurd. When I'm asked this question, I'm put in an incredibly uncomfortable position. I either imply that the contestants are undateable as a whole, insulting a group of 24 virtual strangers and also undermining the premise of the show. Or I start a conversation about the misogyny attached to that question, which in a 5-minute interview, in a lineup of 10 that day, I simply don't have the time or energy for. So I'm making it clear now. I was not and will never be so unprofessional to have even an iota of a thought that contestants on a dating show are anything close to a romantic interest. Please stop asking.
The thing people forget, I think, is that it is a workplace that we are watching. You know, a reality of course, it is designed so that when you watch the final product, you do not, you are not bogged down by the formality of a workplace while watching it. The idea is that it doesn't feel that way. It's an entertainment product that you can relax and enjoy and switch your brain off for or whatever. But these are real people who are working at a job, collaborating together to make something. It is completely inappropriate to assume that in that setting, people, and particularly a woman who is like sexually open, cannot hold back from trying to fuck these men. It's absurd.
It is. It's completely absurd. And it's not even inappropriate in the don't fuck your colleagues way. I want to be clear about that. Like, this is absurd in the way that it is informed by, as she rightly states, misogyny, in the way that she is treated in media based on a perception of her from ingrained expectations of how a woman should behave or something like that.
Well, yeah, it speaks to all of these things like the Madonna whore complex or whatever, is that if you're a woman who speaks openly about sexuality or about your sexual history or any of these things, then therefore you're a sex person and everything you do is motivated by your bizarre desire to feed that, or, you know, I'm
to engage in
blowing
coitus.
This a little out of I'm blowing this a little out of proportion, but it is extremely uncool.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring that to our Batch World catch-up as a bit of a segue into the way that we start to think about F-Boy Island and the way that this conversation has been framed in the media and the ways in which we are trying also on this pod to sort of step away from this kind of framing. And so the way that we've decided to begin this episode is with a segment that we premiered last week on the show. Xavier, why don't you tell us about it?
Sure. So this is a segment where there are so many men on this show. The show is called F-Boy Island. It's definitely focused through the lens of which one of these boys is good, which one of I assume there's only one good one. It's probably about right.
That answers our question from before.
It's true. Which of these boys are good? Which of these boys are bad? Let's examine all their behavior, that kind of thing. But, of course, that is neglectful of the truly great leads of this show. Who we're enjoying more and more, or at least speaking for myself, I am appreciating getting to know them. And I think it's exciting for us to try and talk about these women without the men getting in the way. And so this is a segment where we try not to invoke the boys at all. And if we do, what happens? We get...
we have to cut it and we have to edit the podcast around it.
That's right. So this is, of course, a segment that we call Bechdel Boys.
Would you like to get started?
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to, for some reason, I thought you were going to do something else. Yeah, let's get started. Kind of a tricky one this week.
Whoa, Zavy. Whoa. Hold on a second. Now, I am so sorry to interrupt you. And you know that I am a busy man. And so what I have to say next is so important that it merits interruption. Because I have spent so much of my precious time this week making sure that these little segments that we have devised together carefully can be properly introduced to the audience. So this is a segment that we have created called Bechdel Boys, based on the Bechdel test, which is the test where, as we all know, Xavi,
a piece of media fails or succeeds the Bechdel test based on whether or not there is, at any point, a conversation between two women that does not revolve around or
invoke, right, their relationship to any other man.
Their relationship to any man.
Right. Okay. Great.
At its simplest level.
And to make that extremely clear to our listeners, I have prepared an introductory sound effect. You ready for this?
Yeah, go.
Listener,
for it.
Please feel welcomed to our new segment, Bechdel Boys. You're listening to the Bechdel Boys on the Bachelor of Hearts podcast. No girls allowed.
Max, I don't know if you fully grasped exactly what the idea for this segment was.
I don't understand what you're saying. I don't understand why you're asking this question. It seems to me like if you were serious about this, you would already be talking about the women.
Oh no, now I'm being called out. great stuff, Maxie. Thank you. There is a lot of good, and now I'm. There's some great stuff in these episodes to do with the bond that is emerging between these women. You know, there's a really great stuff at the start of episode three, where all three women are catching up around the breakfast table, and it's like. You know, it's casual. Like, I know that this is a staged girl chat, right?
Yes.
Like, this is the type of thing you see at the start of almost every reality TV show episode that has ever been put to air. Like, they're catching the audience up. They're reminding you of some things that happened in the previous episode. They're giving the editors an opportunity to, like, cut in some sound bites and some, you know, highlights and clips and that kind of thing. But I feel very... concrete, like, levels of actual connection between these women. Like, the conversation, their excitement to catch up feels so genuine to me. I think you can feel that relationship is real. It's not like it doesn't feel like The Bachelors.
Right, exactly.
Oh no, shit, that's men.
Okay, but that's fine. Look, okay,
no, I can't say anything else.
Okay,
I'm out. You gotta take the flame and run with it.
Okay, there's clear camaraderie between the women, and that feels authentic and genuine. Here are some reflections that I have had this week. Number one, Molly's got jokes.
Molly's funny.
I think that maybe we find different things funny, but I appreciate that Molly's got jokes.
Relating it back to your experience as a man, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, please go on.
No, it is. Yep, thank you. And that is my turn to pass the baton to you for invoking men.
Molly comes from a big family. We learned that on these episodes.
That's good.
And she wants to have a big family with whoever, well, not necessarily with whoever wins this, but whoever she ends up with, if that is not one of these men.
Who? What gender?
Fucking hell.
It's so
okay,
hard.
Am I swapping it back to
it's
you?
It's my turn now, okay?
All right.
Now, I am impressed with the resilience and temerity that Ziara shows this week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I am impressed because in situations
he's struggling
that she has to deal with that are given rise to... by things that we are not allowed to talk about.
Yeah.
Ziara.
She really.
It's like water off a duck's back for her. I am impressed that Ziara is 21 and that she's like, cool, bring it on. I am now taking all comers.
Bring it on, a movie directed by a man, unfortunately. So let's talk Sophie. I think Sophie had a great week this week. I will, in fact, be talking a bit more about Sophie as we proceed further into the episode. This is my way of saying the things I have to say about Sophie will not get said in this segment.
It is so difficult. This is such a challenge, and it does
really... We're honestly trying. It's a bit of a bit, but it's like, it, because everything is so influenced by these men.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the show's called FBI. It's so informed by men. I'm excited to continue doing this and to note down the things that don't invoke the memories of men, but we have, look, honestly... failed, because I think the show might have failed. Anyway, let's continue.
All right, let's talk. Let's quickly visit one of our new segments. All we do now is segments, by the way. We've kind of cut out any part of the show that is not a segment for the F-Boy Island recaps. I think that's great.
I think
honestly.
This is the structure that we've got to go with now. Now, what's our next segment? Again, I've forgotten.
The next segment that I want to do, we're just gonna kiss it briefly on the cheek, and then we're gonna revisit it again later on for a full blown bash. And this is a segment that we've started doing called the Boys Club.
The Boys Club. Okay, now what's going on in the Boys Club this week?
So basically, the Boys Club is the segment.
Whoa, Xavi, you have gotten so far ahead of yourself.
You asked me a question.
You have gotten out of control.
I'm just trying to make
with
a
your
podcast.
Hosting of this podcast. This is nuts to me. I can't believe
this day
that
come.
You would consider even a little bit talking about what's going on in the Boys Club without giving our listeners an adequate understanding of what it means to be in the Boys Club. Okay? And so to our listeners and to you, Xavi, I would like to say that I have pre-prepared an introduction. Who's in and who's out?
Oh, what are you doing here?
It's the Boys Club.
Good to see you, mate.
Did you start playing one of the other ones
by accident? Yeah, very accidentally I did do that.
Okay,
there was an
excellent.
Accident
That's
on
great.
My behalf.
Yeah, okay. Max, that was... literally, I was dancing. That was like 8 seconds of a really good piece of music.
You know what? It's an 8 second delay.
Did you sample that or did you write that loop?
No, I found it on the internet for free.
Okay, right. Okay, good. All right. So, yeah, we're in the club. The Boys Club is where we talk about new additions and new departures from the show. And I think we should just start by saying something wild happened this week.
This was incredible.
An absolute game changer, as Abby said, something that'll shake reality TV as a concept. You know, it'll leave it weak in the knees. I don't know what she said exactly. We've got Intruders this week,
now,
which is this new thing I think they've come up with maybe for this.
What is this? What does that mean?
It's kind of like, I don't know if you can imagine this, like people who are sort of not welcome,
like outsiders,
and they sort of arrive on an island and then sort of stake a claim to it as if there were no original inhabitants there, and then set up a system of, like, you know, where they're in power almost, you know, that they've got the upper hand. For what could be centuries, they will rule, you know what I mean?
They set up,
it's kind of, imagine something like that.
They set up like fast chicken franchises.
Yeah.
Colonial fast. Sanders.
Yes, they do. Yes, they certainly do.
Tell us, who intruded?
We got three new intruders this week. It is episode 3. We got three new people. Kind of pretty early, right? I don't feel like intruders are normally introduced this early.
It makes me wonder how long this series is going to go for, or how poorly things were going between the women and the existing men of the cast. I wonder if they get to provide that feedback along the way.
I saw a rumor, and I don't think this is true. I want to put that down pretty clearly that I have my reasons to believe that this is not true.
Okay.
But I heard a third-hand rumor from someone who knew someone who like worked on the show in some form. And I don't know for sure if they worked on the Australian one, on the New Zealand one, or the American one. So this is really, take this with a mountain of salt. But apparently, according to this person, a bunch of the men, when they arrived at the islands, and particularly a bunch of the F-boys, were just like, oh, fuck this. And they just like went off around, you know, because it's not an island, right?
Oh!
But this is what this person's rumor said, was like, when they went to the island, this is part of the reason why I don't believe it, is because it was this rumor circulated around the fact that it was an island. But they were like, they just walked off and just like went and tried to find places to get drunk and like hook up with random women and shit.
Oh my.
Like, do their F-boy thing, which had me thinking about introducing a species, you know, or a race. Or this is murky territory.
It sure is.
So I don't know if that's necessarily true, but it did get me thinking about these new men coming in like that. What was I talking about? I've completely forgotten.
The rumor that you heard that they did this. Why were we talking about that?
I can't remember.
Mm.
So that might be why. So it lends some credence to that, in the sense that like, if they got rattled by the fact that some of the men were not all too keen or whatever in the first couple of episodes.
Oh.
You know, maybe they had intruders planned to come in on episode 5, and they were just like, let's scooch
him in a
week early or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Interesting.
Who knows?
Okay, so what have we got here?
I don't think that rumor is very useful, but it's just worth entertaining. So we have the cheeky bleach blonde Simon, the extremely tattooed Chris.
Yes.
And the mulleted mustachioed Vernon.
Now, I want to say something that I think is true of the entire cast except for Abby. No one is dressed well.
Ooh, I did. Yeah. You know what? There's a real mix. I particularly noticed this because I rewatched episode 1.
Mm.
There's a real mix in terms of just like showing up and arriving between people who are dressed quite, you know, beach casual, flamingo shirt, you know, party vibes. And then also people who are wearing like suits and like, you know, I'm going to a wedding or something. You know, like there's kind of a weird mix of high and low dressing, I guess.
I think that the mix of high and low dressing is confusing. I don't think anyone is executing. I'm also not sure about the women. You know, there's something that's giving a bit like boohoo.com about this.
I think the styling on the women's okay.
Okay.
For me, I have noticed the men being styled worse, but that seems sort of thematically on point.
Yes.
You know, like...
There's something there also, though, about this being a choice that Vernon has made in particular. This is what gave rise to me wanting to talk about this, because the mullet...
It's quite... The Vernon look, you know, is quite like... I want to say like 1980s cricket player. Like, what's the era?
Yeah, you're right. It's like David Boone sort of thing. I will say that I don't like it. That's all I'm going to say about it. I don't like this look. I think this is bad.
None of these three intruders really, like... I don't know. It's not always the case where you have intruders that are like hotter than the original cast.
True.
But I think that is one of the more effective ways to do it. And that's not to say, obviously, we're just talking about personal preference here. And some people, including maybe the
hotter in the eyes of the leads is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you like, when you have a bombshell that enters the villa in Love Island, I nearly said F-Boy Island. They are, you know,
akin,
barking up the same tree. It's usually a focus that new person is like even hotter than the people that are already there. And maybe it's just like they're new and shiny and the luster of the existing people has come off a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was necessarily a focus with these three guys. I might be wrong.
It was definitely a focus, I think, for Vernon. It was not a focus for the other two.
Mm.
Because through the...
Well, Vernon comes off a lot better.
Yes.
But, and he's also much more of the focal point.
Very, very much so.
Okay, well, we've got some first impressions of these three new dudes. We will revisit this segment later when we talk about eliminations. But I think now might be a good time to award our F-Boy of the Week.
Whoa, hold on. What?
Am I going too fast for you again? Max, I mentioned I've got a heart out, right? I can't, you know, we're stopping down for a lot of mischief along the way here. This can't have been a segment that you weren't expecting to come up.
I can't believe, Xavi, that you would just slide so casually into this segment without even considering for a second that this might be something that I might have pre-prepared a sting for.
Oh, right. I thought you were going to say you wanted to talk for 15 minutes about Chris, the guy with tattoos, who I bet we could all say a lot of other things about. Just details, specifics, you know, intricacies, idiosyncrasies that Chris has got going on. Max, please feel free to list as many as you like.
Oh, fuck.
F-boy of the week.
Did you have to actually blow someone up to record that jingle?
I did, in fact. And look, the police are on their way. Xavi, who is your F-boy of the week?
Okay, so I'm not certain that Darcy is an F-boy.
Mm.
I don't know where it's going to shake out at the end, but he really fucked up this week, and
Darcy,
I want to talk about it.
Let's talk.
So there was this group game, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about it in a sec. But basically, it's he was asked some tricky questions. And one of them was, where's the craziest place you've had sex?
Oh, my God.
And the way he answered that was by saying that he had sex at work. I think he said in a bottle shop or something, in the cool room. Is that possible?
You would get so cold. Your bits would shrivel.
But he says that it lasted 10 minutes. And he is asked, did the other person, did all parties finish, you know, to completion or whatever? And he says, I hope so. So that's just a pretty brutal self-own, you know? And he's sitting right next to Caleb, who is unmistakably the villain of the first week, and it made Caleb look really good in comparison.
Isn't it just bizarre that that is the way that it played out? That, I think, definitely clarifies that Darcy is the...
Oh, fuck!
F-boy of the week.
And it's pretty messed up that you had to kill a second person for that, because that sounded mostly exactly the same. The other thing about Darcy, because, like, you know, you can say the wrong thing and put your foot in your mouth and still come out of it pretty well. To do it twice, for some reason, that's where I'm drawing the arbitrary line. The other thing he does, it's not quite as bad, but at the elimination ceremony at the end of episode 3, when all three women walk in, they look gorgeous, everyone's, you know, beautiful, but he's feeling a little nervous, right? Darcy knows that he admitted to this infraction earlier in the day. He's on the edge of his seat a little bit. And so when the three women walk in, he goes, it's like the judge, jury, and executioner.
Oh, my God.
And so that, hearing him say that, made me and my housemate Ollie, who were watching at the same time, both look over at each other from across the room. And in imperfect unison, both of us said, does he think that a jury is just one person?
I will say to you, Xavi, that my nomination for F-Boy of the Week this week is Mitch, 24, and we've had some career progression, according to the show, in the last couple of weeks.
Is that right?
Yeah. So Mitch began the series as being listed as Mitch, 24, country boy.
That's definitely what it says online, yeah.
But given the series of events of episodes 3 and 4... Mitch's job title has been changed. Did you catch this?
I did, actually. Yeah, I saw that he... Because now, obviously, he is not in the same country because he's moved to the island, right?
Right, okay. So he's
now he's
no longer a country boy. And
yeah,
now...
And in fact, his job title is Island Boy.
Yeah, that's right. He is...
I'm going to make a reference to that every single episode.
He is Kodiak Red, one of the island boys whose name I have remembered.
Incredible. Incredible.
Now, no, Mitch's job title has changed to Between Jobs.
Right.
Really good stuff from Mitch, but that is not why I would consider him to be the F-boy of the week. The reason why, and this is, we're getting into spoiler territory here, but we do see some footage of Mitch's recorded submission to be on the program.
Right. This is, I mean, holy shit.
This is great stuff. In some reality TV shows, The Real World is one that I'm thinking of. The Challenge is another. You might get a little peek into, oh, this is what they said in their submission versus this is what they are saying now. In this case, this show has been so unafraid to do Mitch, not even do him dirty, to just show him the way that he is, right? And what Mitch says is, quite frankly, revolting. He says that I love screwing women around. I love telling them what they want to hear and then turning around and doing whatever the fuck I want. I love it. And to me, that is just repulsive, repugnant, so disgusting. Like, this reveal goes to show, I think, firstly, how well produced this show is, that they are just unafraid to absolutely air these men out. It is cutthroat, but it's fantastic at the same time, because for sure, show them for who they are. But then also just goes to speak to Mitch's character in a way that I hope that no one is unfortunate to cross his path ever again.
I do think the audition footage, like, that's, if you're applying for a show called F-Boy Island and you're applying to play the role of F-Boy, you're going to want to play up that side of, you know, whether it's really a side of your personality. I mean, I have no real doubt that he sucks.
Yeah.
But I imagine he's also trying to be as terrible as possible.
That's also true. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think
you're right.
That's what makes it feel especially brutal that they would put that in, just to be like, just so everyone knows, this is what this guy's capable of. My runner up F-Boy of the Week is Nico, who we'll talk a bit more about why in a little bit. He makes the decision to start a big argument in front of everybody, which is really bad. But it's particularly bad because when he gets angry, he starts out of nowhere doing a British accent.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
It's like very different to how he normally sounds. It's very distracting.
I didn't understand why this was what Nico decided to do. There's a lot that happened with Nico that, yes, we will discuss, but I think that he is a worthy nominee for this week's F-Boy of the Week. Xavi, let's move on. Who among us would have known that this was coming?
A-Boy of the Week!
Xavi, who is your A-Boy of the Week this week?
Okay, so my pick from last week, Isaiah, had a decent start to the week. He had a single day on the beach with Ziara. They bonded over being sweaty. He's like real nervous in a cute way. He's stumbling over his words. Ziara, this is weird actually. Ziara ITMs that it's making her realize how young he is, and she's wondering if he's ready for a relationship, despite him being a year older than her.
It's wild.
Because I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but she is 21 years old. I'm actually guessing that they end up together, that this will be a hurdle that they probably overcome. But he's not my A-Boy of the Week, especially because by the end of the second episode, she's got the shits with him for reasons that we'll talk about in a sec.
We will debate, yes.
Yes. My A-Boy of the Week is, in fact, James.
Oh.
And James.
Interesting.
I think he was your floater. He was your boy of the week last week.
Yes, he was just sort of getting by in the world. James is our 24-year-old resort lifeguard with the wavy hair.
Right, and he's very tall. He seems sweet. You know, he describes himself as a bit of a goof. And, you know, by no fault of his own, he's just not particularly desirable to Molly, who's the woman that he's kind of ended up with.
Right.
And so when he ultimately ends up in the bottom two later on, he is clearly very emotional. He's like earnestly hoping that the women will find the love that they're looking for. He has this like wounded puppy dog look in his eyes. He's like, you know, he's got wet eyes. He's not just crying. He's like a wet-eyed man. And I can't get over it. I just get good vibes from him.
No, so James, obviously, no spoilers, is revealed to be a nice guy.
Right.
There's no way that we could spoil that for you based on our description of him so far. I don't know. I think that James felt a little bit, you say wet-eyed, I think maybe a little bit soppy for me. But I also think that is the characterization that the show is placing upon him, and I am a rube. I'm a willing participant.
I mean, he snaps like a twig underfoot, you know, under Molly's foot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is he a soft boy? Would we call him that?
Ooh. I don't think we have enough data on the guy to diagnose. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But look, so James is your A-boy of the week, despite being sent home, which I find really, really fascinating.
Yeah, more of just I rushed putting my categories together. But he came off the best of me this week. What about you?
I don't want to say...
This was actually a tricky one, I think. It was hard to find like a bright spark, a man who really stood out this week.
And that's precisely why I have chosen the man who has gone from zero to hero, our 24-year-old construction manager, Nick.
Nick. Okay, talk to me about Nick. We're going to talk about the Nick situation.
Yes. Okay.
I have got Nick in a different category.
For me, Nick is the A-boy of the week because it turns out that he is good-looking and charming enough to overcome being last week's F-boy of the week, according to me.
Right.
And to redeem
himself.
He's
completely come around for you. Despite being barely present.
In the competition. He is barely present, but Molly has not been able to stop thinking about this man. We will talk about it, but Nick has returned to the competition this week.
Mm.
And that zero to hero has made him this week's A-boy of the week for me, Max Quinn.
All right. Well, Max, I'm glad that we washed the bad taste of the F-boys out of our mouth.
Mm,
I'm glad that we managed to find some bright sparks. But among the positivity is also ingenuity. Moments of big-brained genius that transcend the mind-numbing quality of reality TV.
I see.
A segment where we highlight the smartest move of the week. And this is, of course, a segment called Boy Genius.
Boy Genius.
I like where you're going with the little three-part harmony there. It was very evocative of course, the wonderful supergroup. And then who was that? Which one of the Boy Geniuses was that I caught at the end there? Hard to say.
I am choosing to abstain. Xavier,
yes.
Who made the smartest play of the week this week, in your opinion?
All right. My smartest play of the week was, in fact, from Sophie. So not one of the boys. I don't know if I'm allowed to. Look, Boy Genius isn't boys.
You're okay.
Band full of gals.
Yeah.
It's permitted. I make the rules on this podcast. I do what I want.
Okay. Go on.
Sophie has this great thing that she does, I think twice in these episodes, where she talks to men that she's suspicious of. You know, she's at these mixers, not necessarily taking them out on dates or whatever. It's pretty relaxed, actually. I'm noticing, like, you can take someone out on a date even if you're not that into them, and there's no expectation that means they are jumping way forward in the rankings or whatever. But the thing that I love that Sophie does is that she finds a man that she's not too sure about, and she asks them where they are from. Because invariably, she finds out that they are from the Gold Coast. And then she goes, well, job done.
See you later.
Simon, the new intruder, who we have barely talked about. He's the like bleach blonde guy. I don't know what else. We don't know very much about him. She manages to rule him out within about 30 seconds because she's just like, okay, cool. So where's everybody from? Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Melbourne. Brisbane. And,
gotta go. She's already stated that this is the F-boy capital of the country.
Right. And I truly think, like, you don't actually need to overthink it. That is your ticket to $25,000. You don't want to end up with somebody from the Gold Coast. Just do that. You're probably going to be fine.
I think that it is a pretty sound strategy this early on.
Yeah, and she had a good week, generally speaking, you know? She handles this situation that comes up between Nico and Simon pretty well. Basically, Nico seems to have overheard Simon saying that he's not interested in any of the women. And so Nico tells Sophie, and it starts to snowball. But she works, I would say, harder than most other leads of this type of show would, to genuinely find out what's going on behind it, you know, not just to find out like who started it, but like what is the beef? Where's the beef? And she tells Simon, I'm going to choose to believe you and forgive you, but if I find out you're lying, I am going to send you home. So just don't fuck with me anymore. And then she cracks up laughing.
Perfect.
And I just think she's so perfectly threading the needle. And also it's just so efficient. Like some shows would spend a whole hour working through this thing, going back and forward, letting it build up and play out. But Sophie's so diplomatic throughout it. She just gets it done. And she preserves her level of good humor. I think it's really good. I will say, just because we're talking about it, despite Sophie being my boy genius of the week, this argument still does build and build and build into a big confrontation in front of the whole cast. And then Ziara gets involved as well. We see Nico has to be restrained and sort of pulled away from the fight by his friend Isaiah. And this is kind of when we learn that the two of them are friends, and Ziara doesn't like that Isaiah is friends with Nico, because she reckons Nico is a fuckboy. And so therefore she has the ick with Isaiah, at least for now, even though I personally think they'll probably get over it.
I think so too. This is one of those ones where I didn't understand, firstly, why Ziara had to be involved in the drama to begin with. And then her point of contention, her bone with Isaiah, was that he didn't come up and see how she was doing during this conflict, when what Isaiah was trying to do was resolve the conflict. Like, Isaiah was like, there's a clear point of agitation here. Mm. I am close with this man, given, I mean, we've all been here for 3 days, whatever. Mm. And he was like, yeah, I can fix this. And I really appreciated that from Isaiah. Like, it is important, yeah, to sometimes have a man in the middle.
Yes. And particularly, like, being able to do that without escalating it, you mm-hmm. know, like, it's very possible to step into a fight with the best of intentions and then merely by your presence or by, you know, something you say or your tone of voice or whatever, it
get
then
fighted.
Continues to build yes. much worse. And I also feel like it may just be a difference of how you're brought up or whatever. I you know, there are reasons that are not out of the question for me that he should not feel like he has to, like, comfort her or, you know, that could come off as a bit paternalistic or whatever, particularly for somebody you don't know particularly well.
This is why Isaiah is my boy genius of the week.
Woohoo! Okay. Very good.
I took such exception to the way that Ziara handled this with Isaiah, where she was like, I am painting you in the same way that I am painting Nico. Whereas, like, yeah, I don't know, in this situation, for a 22-year-old man in a bunch of men who are older than him, to be the person who can step into a situation,
most of them physically bigger as well, for what
absolutely,
that's worth,
and calmly resolve it. Hmm. That, to me, made him feel so much older. Like, if you think about it, like he has been miscast by Ziara through this competition as, like, I can see how young he is. No one else in that situation is stepping in and resolving in a way that doesn't result in escalation. Like, and you can see it, right? Sophie tries to intervene. There are so many other men, Justin, who tried to intervene in this situation. The person who is able to step in and make it go away and make it calm down is Isaiah. And for that reason, I think he is my boy genius of the week, because it shows social awareness. It shows also peacemaking tendencies and a calmness to him that indicates to me a little bit of that, like, wisdom beyond his years kind of thing that we are so often want to talk about on shows like these.
Right. And he doesn't call attention to himself or try and get credit for it or anything. He doesn't even try and push back that hard against the allegations that he was doing something wrong.
He's a quiet Shiva. Like, I'm team Isaiah as far as that interaction is concerned. And if I am to say that anyone might have looked a little bit young in the way that they handled that situation, look, I think that we're looking at Nico and we're also looking at Ziara.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because, like, I think everybody had something good to say, and that's the reason that they spoke up in that moment. You know, I think I can't remember exactly what Ziara what her lines were, but I think she had some funny or good or good for TV stuff to add.
Definitely.
And so the temptation is there. And also, obviously, it is in keeping with the show's focus on the women being in power and, you know, running the show, which, again, we'll talk about a little bit later. But for a limited amount of overall gain, you know what I mean? Like, the situation was actually probably better without that.
Absolutely, right? So this is the thing. Like, it's in keeping with the modicum of the show being about women being in control. And I understand that maybe Ziara might have been conditioned to get involved in that situation. You need to be in power here. You need to be in charge. These might have been things that have been said to her by producers on the side. It might just be a responsibility that she feels herself because of the way that the show is set up and the format and all that kind of stuff. It's also in breaking of my golden rule of social interactions when you see other people fighting. Don't get involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay away from that. You don't need that in your life. You can stay right away and it have no effect on you. And I'm sad that not only did Ziara get involved, she got involved in a way that placed her in a compromising position, at least in my eyes, with the man who seems like the strongest front runner and the most likely person for her to end up with in Isaiah.
It does feel very resolvable, though. You know,
this
feels like
that's also
almost the exactly right amount of problem to happen so that they have a thing they can overcome.
A little baby fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of little babies, you know, normally on this podcast, we discuss a piece of media that was designed for broadcast television.
That's right.
And there are certain things you can get away with on broadcast television. There are certain things you can't get away with. And many of the most iconic moments of The Bachelor in Australia revolve around, words that you're not supposed to say on television. Let's just say that.
Yeah, it's true.
In the streaming world, things are a little different. In the world of binge, on the world of pay TV on Foxtel and wherever else this thing's going to end up, those rules are made to be broken, my friend.
The rules are relaxed, and guess what? You can swear.
That's right. You can say just about whatever the
cunt.
Whatever the cunt you want. That's right. So this is a new segment for moments where I'm a little confused by a choice they've made. This is unlikely to come back up again. This is an award that I'm giving out to something that I don't understand why it was censored. And this is a segment that I'm calling Bleep Boy Island.
Now, hold on. You don't expect me to have... You don't expect me to have come up with a sting for a segment that you have invented.
Right. I told you about this earlier today and I said it's probably not going to come back up again.
Because we had agreed on a format.
That's right. You know, I just randomly started adding stuff.
Here you are adding segments willy-nilly as if I, during my busy day, might have had time to do something like this.
It was a bit...
Boy of the Week.
Admittedly,
you sound different in that one.
Admittedly, that was one that when I found out that we were doing it, I did have to throw something together.
You were regretting... Yeah. You were regretting how many hundreds of years ago when we started this podcast.
Oh, by the way, Xavi, happy 150th episode.
Yeah, we did it. This is what we planned for the 150th episode. You want to play that one jingle just play it again?
Yeah, I'd love to, of course. Listeners, you know, happy 150th happy episode 150. From us here at the BOH pod to you.
Boy of the Week.
Cool. So let's talk about Kiss Date Pie.
Oh my God. A great game that we've all played.
Of course. We're all intimately familiar with this game. Abby Chatfield introduces us to a game show, I suppose, that will be played on a group date with all of the men. And it is called, well, the way she describes it is Kiss Date Pie, the PG version of Fuck, Marry, Kill. But she says fuck. So why is it that?
Why is it bleeped?
Why is it bleep?
It's a great question.
I don't know. There's no actual answer. But it's an excuse for these men to get a pie in the face, which frankly, if you ask me, does not happen enough in modern entertainment. Max, did you know one of my actual genuine legit life goals is to take a pie to the face?
Oh, I can arrange that for you.
The thing is, I know you can. I feel like I've now, by saying it, I've kind of ruined it a little bit, because I want it to happen, A, when I'm least suspecting it, but B, when I deserve it, you know?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, look, let's throw this out to the universe and to friends of the podcast.
Yeah.
If we are in a social situation in which you deem it appropriate for Xavier RN to cop the pie juice.
Yeah, that's right.
I want you to go right ahead, and I would love for friends of the podcast, Patreon members, maybe this is an elite tier of Patreon where you get to pie Xavi.
Yeah, except I pay them because it sounds so fun. I was reading up about the history of pieing,
okay,
as I think it's called, because obviously it began with pies, but I think very soon after, they realized, like, ow, that hurt.
Don't
Can we
like
not
that.
Do that? And so most of the time, it's like a empty pie tin with just, like, whipped cream or even just shaving cream in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I want to make it clear that will not cut it for me. I want it done properly.
You want to be swilled with apple and rhubarb.
Yeah. I probably want some cream or something on top, because I think the white, you know, the white... This is now sounding... disgusting.
Oh, go on, continue.
I just want that white cream all over my face, I guess, is what I mean, you know? So if any of our listeners can help out with that, I will pay them. That's all I wanted to say. Don't read into it, and that's just how I feel.
Thank you so much. Look, it is so nice to know that we have the support of our friends, listeners,
in our 150th, endeavors. You know. It did make me think maybe I should go on the show, but I don't know if pie, marry, kill. What is it? No.
Oh, fuck. I got to tell you about snog, marry, avoid.
Right. I was thinking, yes, kiss, ate, pie. I don't know if that will recur. You know?
Yeah, I don't think that this is something that will come back. But it
talk to me about snog, marry, avoid. That rings a bell to me.
It did take the form of a TV series in the year 2012 in the UK, where contestants were sent on three dates, a reality TV series, and of those three men, they would have to decide who they wanted to snog, who they wanted to marry, and who they wanted to avoid. Oh, also, there was a robotic AI voice whose name was like Georgia or something like that. She was British also. And instead of having a host, it was like we put her in front of this big weird machine and they say, you're going now to meet Damien.
Machine was kind of sassy.
Yeah.
Was this that same show where they got makeovers? There's a show with a robot where like a woman would come in and she was like, dressed real tarty, you know, she'd be like, I'm a slag from South London. I love fucking... I don't think any of that happened. But then they would get a makeover from the robot. This is clearly a different show. Maybe we'll have to do another episode on that too.
Wait, no, you are absolutely right. This is the same show. Okay,
yeah.
The show focused mainly on transforming fakery-obsessed or slap addicts
in
Britain.
Yeah, because they would be like, I love wearing 600 kilos of makeup on my fucking feet. I don't even care where it goes.
This show ran for six series.
It probably is one of the most, like, unfeminist, like, the most damaging to humankind things that I can remember. If we were to revisit it now, I bet it would be so, so evil.
So, yeah, that's exactly what happens. They, Oh, goodness gracious.
I never leave home without me extra set of fake teeth. I put them on top of me regular teeth and it looks like I've got two pair.
Oh, my God.
And then the robot is like, have you considered a normal version of teeth? One set of teeth. And then she's like, oh, it'll never work, but all right. And then they go out onto the street and they ask people, like, what would you do with this woman? You know, what would you do to this woman who wears makeup on her feet and has two sets of teeth? And they'd all go, oh, yeah, probably avoid her. She looks
this
a
is
bit
right.
Nasty.
This is what it was. Yes, yes.
And then they would give her the makeover and then they're like, oh, she's a fit bird, isn't she? Right number of teeth and everything. Makeup on the right part of her body. Right. Oh, yeah. Let's give her a shag.
Episode 9, Series 2. Pod, which is the name of the AI, strips Vicky of her precious false eyelashes and meets military cyber goth Ebony.
Okay, this sounds great.
I think that maybe this is a Patreon series for us.
Oh, absolutely. Okay,
six,
that's fantastic.
Series of Snog, Marry, Avoid. Let's go.
Jesus Christ. Okay, good. What were we talking about? Pies to the face, of course.
Pies to the face. Look, I've got nothing else to say. It's time for us to move on to a new segment.
I never leave the house without pie all over me face. I'm addicted. Okay, I actually remembered what I was saying. I just wanted to finish talking about this this group date. So there's a very showy but very fun editing choice that gets made here.
Oh, tell me.
So they just decide to skip like most of this challenge because it went too long.
This is so good.
Yeah, and I think we should talk about it. The show like calls out the choice to, it's like nothing really important happened. There's like on-screen text that's like, here's the important details. It's basically doing our job for us, which I kind of appreciate. And then instead of watching all of the like people sitting on stools and being like, oh, that's a good question. I guess I had sex with three people, but not at the same time. You know, like all that stuff.
Yeah,
they just skip straight through it. And what they do is instead they just play the fucking pies hit in the faces in slow motion.
It's
because that's all anybody wants to see from this segment.
It's like they have just cut to the quick and it makes so much sense. It is like the reality TV equivalent of the SpongeBob 5 minutes later.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Don't you think? Where it's just like, we are getting rid of all of this boring shit that you don't need to see.
Right.
We know you're not invested in the romantic outcomes to do with whether or not this man has had sex with three women at the same time, or well, maybe that's
they
scandalous
shoot so
enough,
much
whatever.
Footage for these shows that cannot go into the final product.
Precisely.
And so here, instead of just, you know, like we talk about this a lot on The Bachelor, like they'll cut something for time, which is understandable, but instead of acknowledging it, it just feels like they forgot to do it, or, you know, it feels incomplete.
They cut out fucking all of Thomas Malucelli's family dates at the end of the fucking Bachelor season, this
perfect
most recent
example.
Season. Just give us this little interstitial screen that says, you know what, this is boring. We know you don't want to see it. Fuck yeah. See you later.
And they give you the notes. They're like, we learn here that this guy called Mikey admits to cheating on his ex-girlfriend. And then this guy called Sean gets asked the same question and he sort of tries to wriggle out of answering it in a way that makes it very obvious that he definitely has. And then also we learn that, or at least Vernon, one of the new intruders, says that he's been single for 6 months, which we are then told will be important later. Like, I get, obviously, this is not like playing to the top of the audience's intelligence or anything, you know, like.
No, but it kind of is also, like, it's breaking the tropes in a way that is playing to that level of intelligence where it's like, you know, and I know that no one wants to see this and we are just going to fucking say it.
Right. So it's like, yeah, I, you know, if the whole show was just us reading from a screen or whatever. it would not really hold up. But yeah, this choice is fun. It's irreverent. It keeps the energy and the momentum up. I think it was really good.
Me too.
Okay, this is a category I'm a little nervous about bringing up.
Why?
Because I feel like
what could possibly make you nervous?
It might be more relevant later, and I am hesitant to, you know, paint someone with this brush at an early stage of the show. But we have this segment for a reason.
This is right.
The segment is focused on, we've been watching these shows for a long time. We've seen some patterns emerge. We've seen some certain types of people who make it off these shows and, you know, fall down particular rabbit holes and things like that. We've talked about it to no end. So this is a segment in which we speculate in a totally not legally actionable way about which one of these men is going to become our next big conspiracy cooker on social media in a segment called Q-Boy Island.
Q-Boy of the Week.
Really good, Max. Thank you. Yes. Okay. An uncharitable category. We're all on the same page here. I think there is something in the way that a certain person on the show seizes on a very small piece of information during these episodes and then shares it with everyone possible to the degree that he's really kind of ostracizing himself, you know, kind of putting himself in a category outside of the mainstream, I guess.
I can see where you're going with this.
Right, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying, you know, we of course hope that nobody goes on to do these weird cooked shit on social media. But look, if it's got to be somebody, the boy I'm referring to is Mitch.
We've talked about him.
Yeah, we talked about him before. He's described as being between jobs. And he shares this story of matching with a woman on Tinder who disclosed to him that the reason that she was single is that her boyfriend dumped her to go on F-Boy Island, and that boy's name is Vernon. So obviously, this is a pretty juicy story. It's something you would not keep to yourself if you happened to have this intel, I'm sure. But Mitch tells not just every participant in the show, but also like the bar staff and the camera crew. And like, it just feels a little bit outside his jurisdiction. You know what I mean? To the point where that has now become his thing. And nobody really knows how to talk to him about anything else, you know? And like, even after the plot has moved on, he's still bringing it up. He's still kind of obsessed with it.
Mitch is treating this like he's got like Scandoval on his hands. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know what you mean.
Okay.
Because I don't know what that is.
Have you been watching Vanderpump Rules?
I have not.
Okay. Here's the situation. There's this man named Tom Sandoval. Uh-huh. He has been dating this other woman named Ariana for like 10 seasons. A really long time. On the side, this year, it has come out that he is engaged in a 7-month-long affair with Ariana's best friend, a woman named Raquel Rachel.
Right.
Now, it is one of the biggest things to breach the Bravo television universe.
I've certainly heard some chatter about it, yeah.
This, to be honest with you, I'm so glad that we are not covering this series, because the level of juice and vitriol that has been associated is beyond the pale. It is fantastic, but obviously it is something that has gotten tongues wagging. It is juicy, the level of detail that continues over time to unravel itself. Mitch is treating this situation in a very similar way, where he's like, I've got the scandal of the season.
Yeah.
And I am going to tell you all about it. It involves a man you've known for one day and a woman you've never met.
Right. It's just not quite, it's not quite hitting the way he wants it to, is it?
It's very, very odd. And Mitch goes around and he paints himself as a little rat gossip.
He does. And he's proud of himself. And like, you know, I get, you know, you're going to jump on something like that, especially because he hasn't really, I don't know to what degree they can tell whether or not they're a big part of the story. But like, you know, after a while on a reality show, you need to find something to cling to. You have to have a thing. Otherwise, you just go, you know?
Right, exactly. And that Mitch could not think of something to be his own thing outside of this piece of information that has been, I guess, revealed to him. Like, he's the only person who has the information.
But
that he makes it his entire thing is such a bad reality TV play.
Yeah,
it leads to his downfall.
Do you have a cue boy or shall we move on?
I think Mitch is a very good example of someone who could be primed to be a cue boy. I have no reason really other than that he is being presented as a villain, and I think that there is a pipeline between reality TV villains and conspiracy theory to suggest this, but I think that Darcy, our 26-year-old emergency officer, might end up being someone that we could look to in this world as well. I have a little bit of an Ali Ochin update also. I was looking at this morning. Ali Ochin, obviously the Bachelorette from season 4 or 5. I don't remember. And
don't ask me. Apparently, I can't remember them.
Hey, makes two of us. Anyway, Ali's dating a new man, which is very good. He's one of these men who runs like spiritual men's retreats. Posts very Thomas Malucelli kind of status updates about like, do you want to activate your life? You're not feeling nourished in the way that you feel like you should. Do you want to generate more abundance in your life? That's a trick question. Everyone wants more abundance, but not just in terms of wealth, in terms of health, in terms of whatever. Anyway, she's dating one of these men now.
So what could possibly go wrong?
Exactly.
Great. Awesome. All right, let's move on. This is a subject that I want to talk about. This is probably one of the meatier areas. And when we're talking about meaty areas... Why do people listen to this? This is a new segment that we are introducing for these moments that have us going, what in the flip? What the fox? What the frick? What? In a segment we're calling WTF Boy Island.
Now, Xavier, unfortunately, I wasn't able to prepare a sting for this segment. I didn't realize that this one was this was going to come up.
No, that's okay.
WTF Boy of the Week.
You got me. You got me.
Got him.
You got me. So here's what's making me go WTF Boy Island this week. They broke the show.
How did they break the show? I want to know everything from your perspective.
Okay, so this is maybe the biggest plot point of episode 4. So let's talk about it. Molly is on a date with my A boy of the week and your boy of the week from last week, James.
Mm.
And we are treated to, while this date is playing out and clearly just being fine but nothing, we are treated to like floating heads wafting on screen of the eliminated nice guy, Nick, who evidently Molly cannot stop thinking about. Hilariously, they are using the same footage of Nick on the beach, like, over and over.
It's very Lisa Needs Braces dental
it
plan,
is.
Isn't it?
It totally is. Flintstones chewable morphine. It can't be chewable morphine? That can't be right. Maybe it is. I forget. So, yeah, it's funny. It overtakes the screen real estate that James is still kind of trying to take up. It's like good editing. Molly ITMs that she is a fucking idiot for letting Nick go. And so she, over the course of this episode, she's working her way through a couple of other guys, including Ricardo, Ricardo is a very interesting character. He comes across very strangely. He gushes to her about how much that he'd like to end up with a nurse, and Molly is not a nurse. It's very strange.
Yeah.
And then I think as you hinted at before, at the end of episode 4, we cut away to a beach where Molly and Nick reunite, and he apologizes and she invites him to come back to the show.
This, I mean, I love it. I love it in the sense that this show is all about the women being in power. This show is all about the women not, you know, being afraid to make mistakes, to assert who they are. I personally felt like this was a bridge too far. This for me was like, you've eliminated Nick, sucked in, date him on the outside.
Yeah, so let's leave aside for the moment the fact that, like, I think his apology was a little bit too clean.
Oh yeah.
And I think that the thing that he did that caused him to get eliminated was to say bros before hoes about a group of men that he had met like that day or day before.
Correct.
Had no allegiance to, and everybody feels very, very happy to just completely let that slide. And I think it's like, it's not just that it's really bad, because I think like I could get around that, but it's so dumb. I feel so dumb. Like I can't justify bringing him back under that, but leave that aside for a moment.
It's so,
it's one of the dumber things. It's one of the dumber things that anybody has said or done on the show so far, in my opinion.
The whole point is to get to know her, to be for hoes, for lack of a better word.
Right. It's called
it's called
Hoes Island, not Bros Island. It's not called either of those things. But beside that, right, moving beyond that, I just can't work out how this is like fair. Like,
it is so against the rules of everything that is to do with reality TV. It's not fair. It's not fair to anyone. I hated it, but I am so happy that it's happening.
Let me talk. Yeah. So like, yes, obviously it's not that serious. It's a reality show. It's dating. It's nonsense. We're all having fun. It's very irreverent. And as Abby says, and I 100% agree with this, like the foundation of this show is the girls are in charge. They make the rules. they can do what they want. And I love that. I don't mean this dismissively. I actually think that's a fucking good thing about this show. But also, I don't think they have sufficiently like squared the circle in terms of this is a game show, right? In addition to being a romance reality dating show, this is a TV show where there is money, prize money, genuine money on the line. And I can't square the fact that Molly has just broken the game, you know?
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because she now has confirmation that Nick is a nice guy.
That's right. Exactly. So she has, if she wants, a guarantee that she will end up with the money. Like, the rules of the show are, if you end up with an F-boy, by some mistake, by some twist of fate, there's a chance he could just choose to walk away with the entire thing and leave you there scratching your head. But she has circumvented that, you know, and so that means that the challenge and part of what's interesting about the show, unfortunately, you know, the challenge of picking a nice guy over an F-boy is now no longer really there for Molly.
That's
true. It's a fake, you know, like she can still enjoy playing the game as almost a spectator, knowing that she will, as long as she keeps him around, she will be safe. You know, Nick is her get out of jail free card. But it's hugely, you know, it makes things less interesting for Molly. It's also hugely unfair for the other women who are still competing on the same playing field,
right,
they once were.
Do they get also a free square?
A free pass, a get out of jail free. And then also all of the men who are competing for Molly, like why would they even continue trying at this point? Because she's kind of made her choice, right? Does this mean that we're going to see some of her men going like, oh, fuck, well, maybe I'll try getting together with Zia. Like, particularly, okay, let's say you're an F-boy right now who's still in the game and you're currently in Molly's pool and you're dating her. You've been trying to make it clear to her that you're really into her. It's not a money thing. But now you learn that there is a very strong chance that you don't actually have any opportunity to get this money at all. What do you do? Do you just switch to, do you keep playing for nothing, or, you know,
it's so hard because, like, at this point it has been made clear that Molly is only interested in Nick and potentially also Vernon, and there are clouds about Vernon, and she has absolute certainty that Nick is a quote unquote nice guy.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to assume that that will stay true forever. She might find herself becoming more interested in other people. She might find herself becoming less interested in Nick. I almost feel like that might be the best way out of this situation, is for Nick's nice guy status to be revoked in one way or another.
Yes.
Whether that means,
as it already has been.
Well, yeah, like, does it require Nick to do something bad so that... Mm-hmm. You know, if you're editing this show or whatever, you're starting to freak out about not having an ending anymore. Do you wait for Nick to hit on one of the other women and then go, oh, he was an F-boy all along, he even fooled us? Or is the idea, like, we get to the end, right? And let's say Molly has got, let's say Vernon and Nick at the end, right? Let's say
it
comes down to
those two. Which is the most boring way that this could go.
Sure, but let's just say hypothetically, on what we know
yes.
now, do the producers then ask Molly to choose between love and money, right? So it's like, would you still get with Nick even if we took away the money? That's another way they could hypothetically end it.
True.
But again, seems like a bizarre outcome for the first season of this show.
Yeah, it's so hard. Or they give the money to Nick anyway, and Nick still gets to choose. You know what I mean? Like, as
are they really going to put the power in his hands at the end of this show, which is so much about the women?
I don't know.
Running it?
I don't know. It's almost like she's sold her soul in a certain way, and that bill has to come due at a certain point, because it can't just be as it was in this fourth episode that, oh, two men get sent home now because she's brought one back.
Right. If anything, that does nothing, right? That truly does nothing. It
changes
doesn't make
nothing
any
for
difference.
Me. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't change the stakes. Look, I love that it happened from a bizarro reality TV where breaking the rules do whatever perspective.
I want to make it clear, I don't think this is bad in terms of entertainment. Like, I am very entertained by this.
Yes.
It just means that there is like an open wound in the construction, in the
game mechanic.
right, the skeleton underlying this thing, you know, that they are going to have to find a way out of. I'm very curious to see what this means. Or do we just get the very unsatisfying ending where they're hoping that we haven't really thought about this that much? We get to the end and she goes, hooray, the guy I liked in episode whatever, 3 and 4, I guess 4 when he came back, I still like him and we get to split the money and isn't that great?
Isn't that so good?
We don't get to see or hear any more of the cool shit that Molly has on offer because she's kind of written off. You know what I mean?
It's very, very hard to say at this point.
We're at risk of losing one of the great characters of this show, which is Molly, who like has a perspective that's interesting from this relationship she was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I want more of that. I don't want her to just be, you know, locked away.
I wonder if this is a good time to take a step back in time, Xavier.
Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, that would be helpful because I do have to leave soon to go to a movie. So if we could transport ourselves back in time a little bit, that'd be fantastic.
Well, it just occurs to me that we've started talking about the comings and goings, who's here, who's not,
who's with us,
who isn't, who's in and who's out. And I wonder if this might be an appropriate point to return to a place where we have been once before in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Take us there, Max.
Who's in and who's out?
What are you doing here?
It's the boys' club.
Good to see you, mate.
I really love that, Max. You've done so well.
Thank you so much.
All right. So this is just where we're going to talk about who gets sent home or what happens at these elimination ceremonies. In episode 3, Sophie singles out Nico because he... Well, I think it's weird. Like, I don't even get the impression that she was thinking about it that much before
like,
this.
I don't know why Sophie is targeting Nico because Nico doesn't seem to be... I don't know. There's a lot happening here but that...
Nico's just sitting there and he's, like, grinning from ear to ear. Because I think he can tell, like, oh, this has been a rough week. Like, I'm about to get sent home. This is all a bit silly. But, you know, Sophie notices that this is a bit weird. So she picks him out and then also picks out Mitch, presumably for squealing on Vernon to everybody and their bartender. But also, I like this. Sophie, this is another like smart moment from Sophie on this episode.
Mm.
She kind of calls him out because in her infinite wisdom, she's like, so you said that you met this woman on Tinder, right? Like this hot woman, you talked to her on Tinder and then you found out that she used to be dating this guy. Tinder, huh? Hey, do you still have Tinder? And he's like, well, yeah, I guess. I mean, it's still on my phone. And I just thought that was really good. I mean, it's not a crime to have Tinder on your phone, but it doesn't look amazing.
It doesn't look great being on a show called F-Boy Island.
Sure. Ziara's bottom two are Lakshya, a man we have barely seen, but she thinks is a bit cocky. And Corey, who we talked about more last episode. He's got this very single-minded focus on Ziara. And in these episodes, it's led to the other men feeling the need to ask him for permission to speak to her, which is not a good situation. But he's not the one that gets her home. Anyway, for Molly, it's Mikey, this man who we learned cheated on his ex, and Sean, who we suspect cheated on his ex. So this is both from Fuck, Marry, Pie.
They're really picking off the low-hanging fruit here.
Yeah. And who gets the chop? It's 3 F-boys. We got Cheetah Mikey, Cocky Lakshya, and Squealer Mitch. But the biggest gag, as you mentioned earlier, is when they cut to the audition footage of all three of these guys, and they are just horrific.
It is truly awful.
I will struggle to get this out of my mind, especially Mitch. Who's like, yeah, I just...
Mitch is an extra level of diabolical, even though what the others say is also shit.
He says, like, I like messing him around because I can't be fucked dealing with them during the week. Like, I just don't want to talk to them. I'm like, geez, man. You don't have to go that hard.
It's not even that he doesn't have to go that hard. That is latent misogyny. It is so fucking awful.
Yeah. In episode 4, Sophie's bottom two are Nico and Justin. So they had this beef, this blowout earlier this episode in front of everybody. It felt a bit like Nico was instigating, but we haven't heard too much from Justin about what's really going on. Sophie just wants them to squash the beef. Ziara, picks Isaiah and the new intruder, Simon. He's the Bleach Blonde one we mentioned before. And Molly picks James, with whom she felt no spark, despite him being a sweet, wet-faced boy.
You are a boy of the week.
That's right. And Ricardo, who she feels is putting her up on a pedestal before getting to know the real her. For example, the fact that she is not, in fact, a nurse. And then Clay, this character Clay, who we've not really talked about too much. He is a content creator. He's been bubbling away in the background.
YouTuber.
I think he's a YouTuber, yeah. And he stands up, which, is this the first time or is this the second time he has stood up in the middle of an elimination ceremony?
No, Sean was the last one.
That was Sean. Okay, sorry, yes. But Clay, I guess following Sean's lead, decides that he will stand up here and point out that Ricardo was flirting with one of the bar staff. And Ricardo makes this almost indescribable face of disgust. Ricardo has one of the most expressive faces I have seen on this show.
This is how you get cast on reality TV, people. Stand in the mirror and practice face.
Yeah. I truly think he reacts like, and it's probably just because I watched the whole new season this week, but he reacts like Tim Robinson. This felt like an I Think You Should Leave sketch.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The fact that he got caught flirting with one of the bartenders is so close to him flirting with the zipline in that sketch. It's so fucking funny to me. I really liked it. Anyway, so Sophie boots Nico, who it turns out is an F-boy. Ziara boots newcomer Simon, who's an F-boy as well. And then suddenly it's down to Molly. And like we said, the decision has been made by someone at some higher up point, some producer, we don't know, that if she wants to keep nice guy Nick, who she rescued from the beach from what's it? Oh, they have, we learn there's, in addition to Limbro, there's also nice guy Grotto.
Oh, yes.
Which is kind of cute. We haven't seen too much of that yet. But again, when we're talking about the scripted moments being effective in this episode, I think some of those were really good. There's some good Limbro stuff where the men are like giving confession. There's maybe my biggest laugh of the week was a little fake group therapy session where Lakshya implies that he fucked the coconut. Really enjoyed that. More shows should be honest about that kind of stuff because it is normal. If she wants to keep nice guy Nick, she has to send home both Ricardo and James. And both Ricardo and James cry as Molly apologizes to them and chooses Nick. And James, you know, he's no F-boy. He's a little sweetie pie. He can't help crying. He asks for a big group hug at the elimination. And Abby says, the crew is exhausted. Can we please wrap it up? Which I thought was great.
That was the moment that I laughed the most in this episode because it's so fucking true that if you were on a TV show and you have been there for that long, Jesus Christ, you have been there forever. And it takes, for example, one beer and you are drunk because you have just been hanging out for fucking ever.
Right, right. And even like from the point they stop shooting, it's still another hour or two before you can actually leave because you've got to pack down everything.
Fuck yeah.
Very funny. Mm. And particularly because it's like, really, for a hug? Come on, man. You can have a hug after we stop filming, you know? You can
the hug thing in your that own Abby time. Said that got me was like, you've known them for 3 days.
That's right. Yeah. But we learned that, yes, Ricardo was in fact an F-boy, which to me was a little unexpected. I don't think we really learned the depths of his evil mind.
No, it really positions Clay in a different light for me now, even though I also think that he's a bit of a, weird to say this, but I think that he's a bit of a cuck for copying the move that Sean did.
Well, it's a dibba-dobba, you know, it never looks great. Even though this show is about fostering that environment of skepticism.
Of dobbing.
Yeah. It's still not the strongest move, I guess. But yes, that is who's left. I think we should very briefly touch on one last segment. And this is a segment where we talk about things, you know, just a moment for things that we think that the show could improve.
Oh, what do we call this?
This is a segment called F Only.
F Only.
Really good. The only thing that springs to mind for this for me this week is that the addition of some new men, I feel like would have been a good opportunity for a moment where we see a little bit more of the decision-making process behind which woman picks which guy.
Yeah.
Like, I can see why they skipped that step, especially because, like, one of the things I really like about this show is that the bond between the three of them is such a focus. And there are not that many things, you know, there are not that many opportunities for them to, like, argue. I'm not arguing for a version of the show where they're at each other's throats being like, no, I like them, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but more tension between the women is not what we want.
Right, but I do think, you know, it could be interesting. And obviously, you don't want to force these things either. Like, if it didn't happen, it didn't happen. But I couldn't help but imagine a situation, like, for example, all three of them are just into Vernon, right? Like, yeah. These three new guys show up, and they're all like, fuck, that one with the Moe's looking all right, you know? And then they have to kind of figure out, you know, which one's going to try it on with him, or if it doesn't work, or, you know, like, there's going to be a bit
What's
more...
What's the pecking order?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, it makes me realize that it doesn't look like there's going to be too much overlapping between the three leads and their prospective player pools, which is fine, but, you know, it is also something I just thought maybe they could tap into if they do a future season, or, you know, like, take somebody like Clay, who we've seen very little of, so it's hard to know exactly what's going on with him, but, like, he just kind of seems to end up with Sophie, even though...
Yeah.
Like, there's no initial moment where she's like, man, this guy is my type, or, like, I'm interested in getting to know him or whatever. It just, they appear on a date together, you know? And that would have been an opportunity for the others to be like, okay, see how you go, but, like, I'll be waiting in case it's no good, you know?
Yeah, like, that is kind of my F only for this week, too. What I have been thinking about is, like, it's not only the division of who gets to be with who, but how flexible we are in terms of what if it doesn't work out, or why, yeah, for example, some of these men who, I don't know, it seems like might be more interested in the other women are men that then Sophie is calling out and eliminating and doing the, I don't know, what feels like the easy job of eliminating clear fuckboys rather than men who might be in her pool. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's that thing of, like, some of that delineation of how we understand who is allowed to, in extreme quotation marks, how we understand who is allowed to talk to who would really benefit this show, because it doesn't have to be infighty. It just has to be informative.
Yeah, and it's such a tricky balance to strike because you don't want to get bogged down. Like, you don't want every episode to have to explain a bunch of rules and regulations and stuff. Like, it seems like the choice has been made every episode to just keep the energy up and keep things moving and address the stuff that comes up along the way. But yeah, now that I'm a couple of episodes further into it and thinking more about it, these things are occurring to me of, like, some areas of potential that hasn't been tapped into yet.
100%, yes.
But overall, another really good week of episodes, and I'm very, very keen to see what happens next.
Yeah, this is the thing. This show keeps you on your toes. I feel like there's something new and novel in every episode, and the plot is, to its credit, moving at such a pace that it feels like there's plenty for us to continue to discuss here on the Bachelor of Hearts podcast.
The other thing I'm loving is that the show knows you don't care that much, and I think that's part of it. You know, like, other shows get very stuck on trying to make sure that you like the right people and dislike the right people and that kind of thing. Whereas here, you're kind of free to take it however you want.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost impossible not to find the women, the leads, like, really someone to root for. But it doesn't matter that much if you don't like any of these guys at all. Or if you like some of them a little bit, that's enough or whatever. I think that's refreshing.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, it's nice that you don't also have to be like, you know what? These women are also infallible or whatever. I love that everyone is being given a bit of a warts and all presentation.
For sure. Yeah, totally. So we will be back with you pretty soon for another hit episode of the Bachelor of Hearts podcast, episode 151, coming at you. Until then, though, please don't be shy. Do not hesitate to come and find us on social media. We are at BOH Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Maybe TikTok? I don't know. We're working it out. We're old. What are we going to do? Share the show with a friend. If you know somebody who's watching this TV show, we would love to have them as part of the BOH army. We'll send them a gun in the mail. Very weird. What else do we have to say? Thanks for being here. Thanks, Max, for co-hosting the show. Thanks for doing the editing. Thanks to Evie for our artwork. Thanks to me for begrudgingly posting on social media.
We've had a lovely time, listeners, talking with you about these two episodes of
I can't believe it's been 150 years. I truly can't believe it. And Max, you don't look a day over 140.
Thank you so much. You know, I was thinking today about people who have had children and whether or not they look older because they've had children. I won't share my opinion on that right now here on this show. We can talk about it later. But as someone who has had 150 kids,
right,
I don't think it's true.
No, I think we look as sprightly and youthful as the day we first started it. I completely agree. And because it's an audio podcast, none of our listeners can disagree.
You will never know, dear right. listener. Until we talk to you next time, here's what I have to say to you. We love you.
We love you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
From the first moment.